You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Laurie Moore has been publishing short stories since she won 17 Magazine's Fiction Award at 19. In the years since, she's become one of our most accomplished and beloved short story writers. And now, 15 years after the publication of her seminal collection, Birds of America, she is introducing 8 new stories collected in a volume called Bark. Her protagonists, like most of us, have gotten older, and if they haven't gotten especially wiser, neither have they become less witty, original, or great company. Bark is published by Alfred Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it brings Laurie Moore back to our show. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Now, we don't want to suggest that you haven't been busy. You also have published a novel in the interim, which brought you here some years ago.
Yes, in 2009.
So, but they still are a few and far between. Is it, do you just take a lot of time writing? Or
I'm just very slow, and you know, time flies. Even when you're not having fun, as we know.
You're not having fun when you're writing these stories?
Not always, no.
Because some of them are rather dark.
They are.
So does that affect your mood while you're working on them?
You know, I'm always engaged. And if you're engaged, you're, you know, that's half the battle. But am I affected emotionally? Sure, I get involved with the characters and I feel their ups and downs and you know.
I've talked to some other writers about the similarities between this and being an actor in the sense that, you know, you become the person you are playing or writing, and you're also creating backstory even if you don't use it.
Very much so. I think writers have a lot to learn from actors. I mean, actors really inhabit a character, bring all kinds of things to that character that perhaps the scriptwriter hasn't brought. I mean, they bring their own childhoods. They bring a great depth of memory and skill and a sense of life to their role. And authors at their desk are doing that, you know, but they have to be all the characters.
Oh, but even if it's not autobiographical, on some level, it's all you.
Well, you're drawing from depths of knowledge that can come either from life or from imagination. I mean, you know, you're always inventing, but you're also, as you invent, you're drawing from your knowledge of the world.
Well, there's also the scenery and the plot.
And then there's the scenery and the plot and the costumes, right.
How many different word plays are hidden in this title of this book, Bark? Do you mean bark, the rough cover that we find on the outside of trees, the warning noises that dogs make? I could think of probably a few others.
Right. There are definitely those two. There's in the very first story, bark is used to mean kind of like a kind of criticism, a kind of yelping sound that one of the character tends to make when he talks to people. There's also the word bark that means barge or boat or raft that takes you across the river Styx. And there is a ghost story that would connect with that idea.
Well, actually, that first story isn't called Bark. It's called Debarking,
a word that
I really am unfamiliar with.
Well,
I know disembarking.
Right. And debarking just means that. It's a version of disembarking. But it could also mean to take the bark away. Mm-hmm. So it could mean, you know, the way you bark your shin, the skin, you know, leaves your... In this character's case, it leaves the ring finger of his left hand at one point because his date is trying to get his wedding ring off.
It's interesting that you mentioned crossing the River Styx because I was thinking a bit about Dante in reading this, you know, abandon all hope, ye who enter here, in connection with one of the stories. Well, this is a much less soothing title than Self-Help or Birds of America. Are you warning your readers about the contents of this book?
With Bark?
Yeah.
I don't know. I noticed the word showing up in every story, and I thought, it's just such a great Anglo-Saxon word. Poets love that word, bark, and fiction writers do too. It's a great word.
In your last collection, your characters had all arrived at some semblance of maturity. They were parents and job holders and basically adults. How different is the next step that you are dealing with in this collection?
I don't know. I think in every collection I've had relationships both coming together and falling apart. In this collection, there may be, I think there are two couples that are divorcing, but there are couples that are together as well.
Well, one of the couples that's divorcing wants to kill each other.
Yes, they do.
Somebody pointed out that in your previous stories, they may have tried to work things out here. There's no chance.
I don't think, in my very first collection, there's a wife who actually stabs her husband. So I think there are no actual weapons on the table in this one.
Well, the characters haven't as a group gotten any savvier. One of them bemoans her choice of partner, but admits that the man she fell in love with basically came with a sign that said, caveat emptor.
Oh, caveat emptor, right.
Is it emptor?
Emptor, I think.
Yeah, buyer beware.
Buyer beware, right.
And she goes from fearing that he sells drugs for a living to wishing that
he's a bit of a loafer. He's a bit of a loafer, so she's wondering how they're going to get by. And she worries that he sells drugs and then suddenly thinks, maybe he does sell drugs. And then she kind of is hoping, and soon she's praying that he does. And soon she's close to asking him to sell drugs.
Now, that story's called Wings, and I wonder about all your titles. Is that a reference to Wings of a Dove, to the hymn, to the Henry James story? Because a character, Henry James, now suddenly I think of Edith Wharton, because a character finds her mom's marked up old copy of The House of Mirth in this thing.
Well, it is a reference in a way to Wings of a Dove. And it's a kind of Gilded Age story. It's about two people trying to make it in a, two musicians trying to make it in an economy that's going down. And so they target an old man, very much like the characters do in Wings of a Dove with the young American heiress. And it has a different outcome slightly in my story. It's a plot point that's been used before. And James himself would take these kind of triangles and twist them around and do different versions and have different outcomes from it.
Well, the whole idea of using somebody else's plot point is appealing as long as it's happened all along. There aren't all that many plots out there, are there?
Well, I don't know. I think that plot of a triangle where two people are plotting against another person is just so elemental and so eternal. And of course, James did it best, but it's fun to sort of take that and bounce off of it and do something a little different with it.
My guest is Lori Moore, whose latest book is a collection of short stories under the title Bark. Many of these stories deal with the physical realities of getting older, loss, illness, even death. Has that consideration of mortality and of the consequences of choices made long ago changed these people?
I think a lot of these characters have accumulated a certain amount of regret. That's just part of life. That's part of having a memory and part of realizing that you had choices and went one way instead of another way. I think the most rueful pair are the couple in Wings, and they happen to be the youngest. But yes, the contemplation of death is probably, pretty much everywhere in these stories.
Despite the fact that there's humor in all of these stories.
I hope so.
Does that just come naturally as you're writing?
It's naturally in the world. The world's a very funny place, and it would be it would be a little incompetent of you to leave it out, or it would be a little strict, maybe I should say, to leave out humor when humor is just there in life and in the world. So one finds it as one is writing, and one finds it in one's fictional world, and you unearth it and you let it live, I think, instead of banishing it.
Well, it's not jokes as much as the way you use the language.
Well, some of it's that, and some of it's the way people themselves use the language when they're talking to each other. And
are you that witty in your everyday?
No, I'm not that witty.
You make your characters wittier than you are?
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they are. Because what you're trying to do is distill and condense in a short story. You're not really trying to transcribe life. But you're also trying to capture moments from life that somehow contain in a concentrated form, you know, more vitality in life than your average moment of life might contain.
I'm interested in when you choose to use first person, second person, and third person. One of your well-known early stories was in second person. Something most writers try to stay away from.
Yes,
but the novels.
Me.
The first person, the short stories are in third person.
You're the first person to notice that, yeah. The novels are in first person, by and large. And the stories are a mix, but a little more in third person. There is one story, there are two stories in Bark that are in first person. And I think each of my other collections has one or two stories in first person, but by and large, no. You know, it's a very writerly question, that question of yours, because getting the point of view, deciding between first person or third person. Now, second person is a sort of a novelty act that I don't do anymore, and I'm discouraged.
That's where you say you enter the room and you see
Yes. And, you know, it's sort of mock instructional, and it's also a poetic voice. Poets use it a lot, but it's in fiction writing, it tends to be discouraged.
Well, you use it in a very charming way.
Well, thank you. But getting
but
that
do
point
you start,
of view,
do you change? You say
yes.
You start in first and say, yes. You know, this is not working. I better go to third or vice versa.
Yes, every writer knows that experience. It's a major, major thing when you have to change your point of view. I know of a student right now who's changing 100 pages from third into first. And, that can happen. You can go up a very long ways in the wrong point of view. You can be in first person when you should be in third, and third in first, and making that decision and knowing which you should be in is a key artistic decision.
Well, your last book, A Gate at the Stars, was a novel. Many of the stories here feel as if they could have grown into a novel. Do you know from the start this is going to be a short story?
I did with all of them except maybe for the story Wings. I thought maybe Wings would be a novella, would be even longer.
But I said a Gate at the Stairs. It's a Stars typing error here. Forgive me. But at a certain point, you just know that you've done what you wanted to do
in
the story?
Yeah, you know, at some point, you just, you know, you say this is concluding itself, that the energies that you've set in motion for these people are coming to a close.
Now, the reviews have been fabulous, with a notable exception. Years ago, you told the Paris Review that you had a writer friend who leans over sleeping babies and intones, "May you never be reviewed by Michiko Kakutani." Do you wish that someone had whispered that over you when you were reading?
I don't think she was around. I think we're about the same age. And that friend is not me. It was actually a writer friend who really did say that. I thought it was quite amusing.
Well, Michael Cunningham has said that he wants to be at her gravesite when she's buried. He's going to throw all of his books in so that 500 years from now, when they open it, they'll say, "She just must have loved his work to want to be buried with them all."
I think a lot of writers are going to start sending her their bills.
Laurie Moore's latest collection, Bark from Knopf, is, I said it's published by Knopf. It's the last book that she has written as a member of the faculty of University of Wisconsin. Now you've moved on to Nashville. You're going to start a new school?
Well, I'm at Vanderbilt in the writing program there. And I have a great group of MFA students there, and I'm teaching this spring, and it's so far so good.
Well, it's great having you back here to talk about these stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.